Welcome to Taking Notes, the Lotus Notes and Domino podcast. Here are your hosts, Bruce Elgort and Julian Robichaud.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 16 of the Taking Notes podcast for Thursday, March 2nd, 2006. My name is Bruce Elgort, and I am here today with
Julian Robichaud.
And this evening, we're going to be sitting down at the podcast, podcast desk here, and talk to no other than IBM's Ed Brill.
And it'll be sort of a little podcast fireside chat, I think.
Yeah, I guess this is Ed's first pod. Well, he did one with Lotus User Group at Lotusphere.
Yeah, true.
I guess this is maybe his first full-length podcast.
Full frontal podcast.
Oh, you know, a lot of people probably haven't heard Ed speak in the past, or I'm sure they've seen a picture of him, but maybe they haven't. We'll be sure to include one in the show notes. But Ed's official title, I'm looking at my screen here because it's a whole paragraph long. It says Ed Brill is the business unit executive for the worldwide Lotus Messaging Sales IBM Software Group. So I don't know. Sounds like a typical IBM title. So,
Does that fit on a business card? That could be our first question for him.
That is a good question, Julian. What are we going to be actually talking to Ed about this evening?
Talking to, wouldn't you like to know? Let's see. We've got we're talking to Ed about Ed. Gotta talk about him a little bit. Find out who the real Ed is, the man behind the name.
Are we going to learn lot of technical things?
I don't think we are, and that's too bad because that, boy, we got a lot of questions on the Taking Notes site for Ed, and a lot of them were developer coding kind of, not really coding, but really developer nuts and bolts kind of things. And, sadly, per that title that Bruce just read out, he's really a sales guy.
Yeah, he is a sales guy, and don't feel bad if your question doesn't get answered by Ed, but we are going to be sure to ask him, who we can talk to or who we can get on a future podcast and throw those questions at. So,
because these are things that need to be answered, right?
Yeah, 25 questions.
25 so far.
Yeah, wow. I guess being, slash dotted on Ed's blog there helped out a lot, so.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. Well, you're in charge of the conference call here, Bruce.
Yeah, I got to dial it up on Skype. So, actually, before we do that, Julian, I just want to mention that we do have a 1 minute power tip from Jess Stratton this evening.
Oh, good.
And we also have Michael Sampson's talking news.
Yeah.
And we also have John Rowling's OpenNTF update. And
there's more.
Drum roll, please. We have Declan Lynch providing a new segment on the show here, which is going to cover things happening in the blogosphere, not the blogosphere, the blogosphere. So our show is growing. I mean, pretty cool.
Well, and so what I really hear you saying there, Bruce, is really just kind of get yourself comfortable, settle into a nice soft chair, grab a cup of coffee, because this might be a long one.
Yeah, I don't know where people listen to this particular podcast, but I force Gail to listen to it on the way into work. I plug the iPod into the car stereo, and she just looks at me and says, geek, 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 geek.
Like she didn't know already.
Exactly. So, Let's get Ed on the Skype-o conference call-o here, and we'll see how it goes. So get ready, Ed. Here we come. Hey, Ed.
Hey.
Hey, welcome to the Taking Notes podcast.
Thank you very much.
All right, let's start off with some pats on the back first, Ed. Julian and I just read, and we read on your blog, that you were included in the Network World Best Blogs for Buyers list. And we just want to say congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So now that you've gotten this award, do you have like a small acceptance speech you want to say to the audience or anything?
No, I really don't. I was completely unaware of this article and was surprised to learn of it through the blogosphere, of course. Hadn't found it on Network World's site, hadn't seen any referrers, and so it just kind of came along out of nowhere. But it's good recognition that blogging at IBM is cool and that people are reading.
All right, so you don't need to thank the Academy or read through a list of all the supporting actors from your site or anything?
No, but the key grip is always pretty important.
Best boy.
You get to party with Scoble now, right? On a.
I'm not really focused on the whole A-list thing. I mean, you were there when I met Robert.
But, that's right.
I'm happy that I'm one of the people at IBM who are blogging and people pay attention to, and that's really what matters to me.
Right on.
All right. Well, let's start off talking about blogs then.
Okay.
Now we've heard in the past from at least one person that blogs are just going to go away and they're useless and things like that. But obviously, really, especially over the last year or two, blogs are getting a lot more important for the spread of information, some marketing, some technical information, things like that. So for a blog like yours, it kind of ended up being a way for customers to talk directly to you as well. And how much impact do you think that's had over the last year or so just with you and with your site?
It's pretty big. Not at all expected. I'm getting pretty good at telling the sort of history of how this came about. I started blogging because Volker Weber, suggested that I try it out. And it was really a personal thing at first, but the people that I sort of let know that I was blogging tended to be my customers and partners and people like yourselves. And so that kind of ended up building the core audience. And over time, it sort of gave me a reason to refine my messages to fit that audience. And eventually it became, as you described, Julian, really a way to reach customers and partners on a very one-to-one basis, which is something that when I was in marketing school, you really sort of dreamed about having ways to talk to your individual customers, and now we have it. And I mean, whether it's direct on the blog or it's emails that happen offline or chats or whatever it may be, or just the relationships that get built because of the interplay of people who read and come up to you at conferences and whatever, my interaction with my customer base is really significantly greater than I would ever expect as a worldwide sales leader, and it has huge influence on the decisions that I make every day.
So are you finding that a lot of your customer questions are being answered by something like, well, I blogged about that, go see my blog, or...
I try not to, blog in people's face, as it were. There are definitely questions I've answered on the blog in the past, and I even yesterday started an email we had a discussion on my blog about that. I do find occasionally that there are things that I should communicate to other IBMers that I write about on the blog first and then don't remember to go email them or post in a team room or whatever it may be, and that I've found that my blog voice is my primary voice. And so occasionally I don't remember to, to use the more traditional means of communication. But on the other hand, there are so many IBMers reading that there are times when I reach an audience that isn't necessarily who I thought was on my radar.
All of these stealth readers that you have.
I don't know if it's stealth. I mean, it's just, you never know who's reading. You see a bunch of hit counts, you see subscriptions on blog lines, whatever, but you really never know until you start interacting with people. And like any online community, there are hundreds percentage, 80% of the people are probably just lurkers and readers, and the other 20% are the active vocal participants.
Oh, sure. And you're right. Sometimes it's surprising not only who's reading but who's not. Sometimes I think you'd probably expect people to have maybe read something and maybe they just... I think one of the things I end up struggling with a lot of times is since I keep up with blogs and I have one myself, I kind of assume that other people do too. Now, when you go to customer sites, are you finding that a lot of your customers do really are pretty good at keeping up with this sort of stuff, or not?
I think it depends. I had a fascinating experience the week before last when I walked into a conference room at a customer in Budapest, and the customer looked at my business card and said, "Are you the Ed Brill who blogs?" And I don't know how many other Lotus employees are named Ed Brill. I don't think there are any. But, you know, yeah, I'm the Ed Brill who blogs. And, you know, he said, "Oh, I read every day." And, you know, he was just very, I guess, impressed that I was sitting there in their company's conference room. But, you know, I just happened to be the sales guy. And so, of course, I'm going to show up at customer sites. But, you know, it was one of those things where didn't know who was reading and, on the other hand, didn't know who was coming to a meeting. So it depends. There are certain geographies that are more active in the blogging community. I don't really think there's any readers coming from Japan or Brazil or, you know, some of the other markets. And I'm actually frustrated by that and don't know the best way to sort of break into those markets. But it's mostly a language barrier.
Yeah, I would imagine. And then, of course, there's got to be this, you know, kind of blogging aside, just talking about your sales job. One of the things we don't read about a lot is kind of the staff of people that you work with. Do some of the other people on your staff, do they have blogs? Are they internal blogs? Or, you know, we know you're not out there doing everything all yourself.
Thankfully, you know, no.
Yeah. So tell us about your the supporting actors. Are you the only one out there that's blogging and everyone else just kind of says, yeah, read Ed, or
Yeah, actually, some of the other people who are part of the Notes Domino sales organization are blogging. Just yesterday, I saw one of the technical guys, IT specialists, was writing on the new Yellow is the New Black site. That's Roberto Bocadoro.
Oh, and, yeah.
Darren Adams, who's my sales leader for the UK, Ireland, territory. He occasionally blogs on his own site. Mm-hmm. So some of these are names you know, but there are literally hundreds of people in the Lotus sales organization. I make no representation as to who reports to who. IBM is a very matrix-style organization, so they're not my staff per se, but they're the people who are the feet on the street. And then, you know, there's a few hundred people in development, and there's a group of core people in marketing, and there's the services team. So, you know, there's lots and lots of people that are making the Notes business the success that it is today. And, you know, I'm definitely encouraging more and more voices. You know, we saw Sergi Chano, who's the VP of marketing for Lotus, start blogging a few weeks ago. And there are a couple other Lotus bloggers on DeveloperWorks. Carol Jones, who's in the CTO's office, Anthony Sidiatis, who's our sort of chief competitive guy, my prior role. So, you know, there's other voices out there, and I think more to come. One of the things we're working on is how to put together a group blogging effort for the Notes team that's building Hanover, and how they can start to talk about that release in the blogging world. So there's definitely a big supporting cast, and we want those people to be voices. At the same time, they do leverage what's already going on in the market, and, you know, cite my blog fairly regularly to customers who may not otherwise be paying attention.
Right on. Ed, before we move on to our next question, we're going to hear from Michael Sampson of shared-spaces.com with this week's edition of Talking News. Take it away, Michael.
Hey, good day. This is Michael Sampson from Shared Spaces Research and Consulting, bringing you Talking News for the week of February 20 to 24. In top news of the week, it seems as though there's been nothing spectacular. I have had my mind on some other things, and perhaps the world is waiting for the judge to make a final decision in RIM versus NTP, but it seems like it's been a rather slow week in terms of spectacular news. If I was to put anything in that category, perhaps it is the AOL and WebEx partnering on enterprise instant messaging. AOL has previously tried an enterprise instant messaging play. WebEx has previously tried an enterprise instant messaging play in combination with Yahoo. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. In rounding up the messaging and collaboration news for the week, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office issued a final rejection for one of the five patents at the heart of the NTP versus the RIM case. NTP can appeal that decision, and it depends how long the Patent Office takes to reply to that. The judge in the case, looking at the injunction which should be issued perhaps later today, a decision on that is, has indicated that he will not wait for final decisions. CMICIO project manager at Granger Construction Company's use of CMIC's IO Enterprise and project management collaboration software will be showcased at a conference on March 20, specifically the use of mobile and wireless devices to update the project status will be discussed. People can use such devices to update where they're at rather than having to visit a website. Team Direction says yes to Groove 2007. Groove 3.x came in three flavors, the most pricey being the Project Edition, which bundled project management software from Team Direction, a third party. Groove 2007 will not offer a Project Edition, but Team Direction confirmed this week that it will continue to offer project productivity tools for the new edition and will also continue to support existing customers. As a side note, I actually have Groove 3.x Project Edition and use the Team Direction add-ins myself. Yumunga released Let's Powwow, an online group collaboration service. It enables team members to view and or edit documents simultaneously from any location across Windows, Mac, and Linux desktops. It's free for up to 11 participants, and after that, it costs. It's available immediately. And finally, in rounding up the news, TimeBridge, a cross-organizational calendaring and scheduling startup, as a side note with whom I'm very impressed, is hiring for a product manager and a marketing manager and director. Marketing manager / director, two roles. If you're in the Bay Area, if you're in the Bay Area and you're interested in calendaring, take a look. It's a good company. Notes and Domino blogs for the week. Duffbits only reviewed three books this week. It was four the last time I looked. Dear me, indeed, as Peter would say. Bruce is reviewing his Lotusphere video and sent me a copy to have a look at. Rich is trying out his new IBM BluePad T43. The updated drivers, however, turn it back into a ThinkPad. Volker is Googling for new business cards. Lotus Geek is gifted a guest post position to the other Lotus Geek, that is Bob Balaban. Chris Byrne enjoyed a huge traffic spike, but unfortunately the spike had nothing to do with risk compliance work. In the meantime, Chris is preparing for the Advisor Summit in April in Las Vegas. And finally, there's a number of new posts up about Show and Tell Thursdays, and Bruce has one on replacing paper with a notes application. Shared Spaces have been thinking about a number of different avenues this week. Faldera released a white paper that I wrote for them, and in pushback on the question of sponsored research, I have posted the rules by which I will accept a sponsored research piece. So, interesting times are around. Lots of things going on. Be very interesting, obviously, as this day ends, February the 24th in the US, to see what decision the judge makes in the RIM versus NTP case. But wrapping up, this is Michael Sampson from Shared Spaces, hoping you have a great weekend and a great week. Take care and all the best.
All right, we're back. Okay, so you mentioned, I guess prior to the break, you talked. You said maybe you're even talking about this kind of group Hanover blog. That would be kind of cool. So that'll be a good. That we'll use that as our segue to Hanover.
Okay.
Question five. A lot of questions about Hanover, and we're obviously not going to get to everything here. But you know, just right off the bat. How close are we to a public beta of Hanover? When can we start kind of really touching and feeling it?
We're expecting public beta in the second half of the year. I unfortunately don't know whether that's June or December, July or December, but if I had to bet on it, it'll be third quarter. We obviously, with any notes release, go through a rigorous beta cycle because with the huge install base and the millions of applications and whatever, there's just so many boundary conditions to test. So we're obviously incented to get code out there sooner rather than later. We've done one internal build so far and are working on the second build. The third, or maybe it's the fourth, will be the one that will go out to beta.
Okay, and will that be, do you think that's going to be a true, a real public beta where anyone can go and download it, or do you think that's going to be limited release?
I think too soon to tell. I mean, okay. We already have a software design review process in place with 30 or 40 customers and partners that are sort of our core group around the Hanover release. We're doing focus groups, we did usability testing at Lotusphere, and we're doing it online, and we're doing, you know, all sorts of other feedback mechanisms. So what will be different about Hanover from some of the previous Notes releases is by the time anybody outside the labs takes a look at it in any detail, it will really have been vetted by lots of different audiences, and we think it'll represent really what we want to deliver to market much sooner in the beta cycle than maybe some prior releases.
All right. Well, and there's really a lot of pressure being put on Hanover right now to be kind of the... you know, maybe the savior of Notes. A lot of people, it seems like a lot of the comments are, oh, well, you know, that's going to be fixed in Hanover, or wait till Hanover because that's going to be so cool. And, you know, I hear those things, and I wonder if we really don't need to kind of watch out for that sort of thing, where we keep saying, oh, well, you know, wait for Hanover, it's coming in Hanover. And, you know, that, not to say that turns into vaporware or anything, but it just, you know, it almost makes it feel like, I guess I hate to hear that too much. You know, how are you trying to position that between, you know, Note 7, which we have right now, which we can use, and this Hanover that's coming out at some time in the future?
Next year, you know, we can definitively say 2007. It's a very interesting, you know, issue, and I can remember when we were building R5, we kind of went through that cycle as well, where everything was supposed to be solved in R5, and it really kind of was a self-defeating hype cycle. And so with Hanover, I mean, we need to talk about it. We need people to understand kind of where we're going with the client. But on the other hand, you know, Note 7 is a great release, and customers are saying they're going to deploy it this year. Some of our early research says 60 to 70% of customers plan to deploy Note 7 this year. So if that's the case, clearly it's meeting a market need. You know, it's really a great and powerful release. It runs all the Notes applications that you've built over the years without having to think about anything different in terms of user training or whatever. So, you know, in software, you're always building something new and you're always going to the next big thing. And it's in human nature to want to see, especially on the client side, the latest kind of whiz-bang UI stuff. I mean, we've had that challenge since CCMail for Windows, and you know, and it's just human nature. So, you know, so we really want to, I've basically discouraged the technical sales community from thinking that they're going to go out and do Hanover demos for customers until, you know, maybe late in the year. Mm-hmm. We'd really want to stay focused on Notes Domino 7 and, you know, all the benefits that it's gotten this release.
So what are some of the things in Hanover? Now you got me saying Hanover, not Hanover. Now that you think will make the most immediate impact, you know, with customers, as well as what will make people want to upgrade right away.
Well, the want to upgrade is going to be the UI. I mean, it's just plain and simple the new constructs in terms of peripheral vision and being able to have a bunch of different plugins running in the architecture. You know, that's pretty critical stuff in terms of people wanting to upgrade. I mean, if I could ship it tomorrow, clearly that would be the thing that would be driving the, you know, the excitement and buzz. But really what I think is going to deliver the most value in Hanover is this composite application notion, because for the first time in 17 years in the product's history, Notes will talk to something other than the Domino server or Note server prior. You know, today that is really the biggest limitation of Notes as a rich client environment. It can talk to POP and IMAP, and it can have an embedded browser. But basically, Notes is a client for Domino today. So with the Hanover release and this idea of composite applications, we're talking to any kind of a web services application, portal-based architectures, SOA, et cetera. Just trying to get all my buzzwords there. But really, it's the first time that Notes does more than Notes. And I think that is, you know, an incredibly powerful statement for the customers that have already invested in Notes infrastructure and what it will mean to be on Notes 10 years from now.
All right. Well, as you know, we've received a lot of technical developer type questions about, you know, Hanover on the taking notes site, as well as a couple on your site. Since you're a sales guy and not a tech weenie like us, we're not going to try to get you to answer questions about coding or anything like that.
Oh, see, I've been busy writing some Lotus script functions, you know, the last couple of days, just so I could answer those questions.
Wow.
Oh, well, in that case.
All right. No, but really, some of these things are, you know, questions people have been bringing up year after year after year after year after year. Okay, for a while. So who would be a good person for Julian and I to get in touch with to at least get some of the, you know, those technical questions, those some of the 25 that were posted on the site answered, you know, or maybe we can get them, you know, to do a podcast, or maybe they have a blog or something. You know, what would you suggest?
Well, there's a lot of different people to talk to. I mean, Mark Jourdain is the product manager for the Domino application development environment. And, you know, he's kind of a behind-the-scenes guy at the moment, but maybe you'll draw him out of lurking. You know, there's plenty of other people in the Notes Domino development team, people like Andre Girard, who participate in forums and answer questions on websites. So, you know, the people are out there. And, of course, if all else fails, you could ask, you know, some of the former product managers who've ended up at Microsoft now. They certainly seem to think they have the answers.
Going back, just rewinding a little bit, Ed, you said that the Hanover client will talk to something other than Domino. You know, what are some of those things that we'll be able to talk to?
Well, I mean, I think it's really, you know, it's a web services statement. It's a consumption of web services thing. So, you know, we're really kind of building around a model where you could be looking at a customer tracking system in Notes and have that linked into your customer purchase order system that's running in SAP or whatever it may be. And some of that's possible in Notes today, but instead of it being, you know, something that passes through DEX or LEI or whatever, that it would be actually rendering the SAP application and being able to interact with it in the Notes client environment.
Okay. We're going to just take a minute or two out here for John Rowling's OpenNTF update. So take it away, John.
Hello, this is Greyhawk68 with this week's OpenNTF update. The March featured OpenNTF project as Domino Outline to Ajax Menu Transformer by John Hart. This tool allows you to create dynamic DHTML menus by using the Domino Designer Outline control. It couldn't get much easier for you Domino geeks. Gary Cousins and Bob Brodsky have released version 2.4 of the Vacation Request project, so now I guess they can go on vacation. Version 1.2 of the In-N-Out Board project has been released by Brian Peterson and Kevin Gross. In-N-Out Board is an electronic version of the old-fashioned wall-mounted In-N-Out Boards. Blogsphere 2.5 has been released. Blogsphere is a Domino-based blogging template brought to you by Mr. Turdy Tree and a Turd, Declan Lynch, Christian Brandliner, Chad Sheffelt, Kevin Pettit, Rocky Oliver, Joe Litton, and Tom Duff. Don't forget, you can easily rate each and every OpenNTF project by going to the project's About page, and on the right-hand side of the page, you will see a section called Rate This Project. You can select from Brilliant Stuff, Very Nice, Average, Needs Work, and of course, Bad. You can also rate code that's in the code bin. Rate away and let people who have made contributions know how you feel. About their code, that is. This has been the OpenNTF update for this week. Check in next time.
All right, John, thanks for that second update that you've done for the Taking Notes podcast. Gotten some really good feedback on it, and I hope you can continue to do it for us. So you have that super radio voice that at least I don't have. But
John Rowling, OpenNTF DJ.
So, Ed, you know, we got a lot of questions, as I said before, on the site, and we're at that part of the interview where we're gonna throw some of these at you.
It's alrighty.
A little unfair because you've got to see them all before, but... you know, we have this little mystery guest here. You want to introduce yourself? No, I'm just kidding. All right. So Bill Buchan had a question. It said, for those of us who did not make it to the Innovation 101 session at Lotusphere, what does the 64-bit stuff that Microsoft's talking about mean in terms of the next generation node servers?
Domino servers.
Domino servers. Sorry about that.
Yeah, okay, fine.
So, you know, it's very interesting because I've read a lot of the stuff that Microsoft's saying about why they're going to 64-bit, and it's about getting a wider address space for talking to storage area networks and things like that. And, you know, it's probably going to address some of their memory fragmentation issues that have plagued Exchange since the inception of the product. So that's all well and good, but, you know, we're not seeing the same set of issues in the Notes Domino environment. We were able to extract incredible gains in scalability and performance in the 32-bit architecture going from release 6 to 7. So it kind of puzzles me to see, you know, all the spin that says, oh, we have to go to 64-bit for email. I mean, we were doing email routing in 8-bit architectures,
that's
right?
True.
So, you know, it's really kind of puzzling to see that, to think that the requirements for a product that just does email have changed so substantially that 64-bit is the only way forward. So we don't believe in that. You know, what we do know is today we already run on some 64-bit architectures. I-series and Z-series Linux are both, you know, ways that we run that way today. They're not, you know, Notes is not compiled, Domino Server is not compiled, this is a 64-bit environment there, but, you know, we're taking advantage of those kind of operating systems. And that really talks to our philosophy for the future. So we're not going to ship a 64-bit version of Windows Domino in the Hanover timeframe, but we'll be in beta with it by then. And really the point to underscore is the 32-bit versions won't go away at that point.
All right.
Right. You know, and they will still run on the 64-bit operating systems.
Right.
Yeah. Bruce, do you think we should do all the techie questions first?
No.
And
let's,
then go to the soft ones?
Let's mix them up because we don't have time for all of them. But I want to throw this one at Ed because I know Ed is a traveling monster. So Brian Green asks, you know, when you travel on business, what are some of the things you don't leave home without? And what are some of your favorite tech gadgets that you take along with you? Keep it clean, Ed. This is a clean-rated podcast.
So power adapter for in-flight power systems is a must. My digital camera, which right now I'm using a Panasonic Exilim, which has a great Leica lens, and it's a 5-megapixel. That's always in my laptop bag because you just never know when you're going to end up someplace where you want to take some decent pictures and not just, you know, the crap you get out of a camera phone.
Right.
My phone's a GSM phone, you know, quad band, works all over the world except for, I think, Japan. And
I wonder why they don't listen to you.
That's probably actually the most critical, you know, sort of tool in the geek bag is the cell phone, because, you know, with the roaming features that we have in the IBM phone system, when you call my office number, it just connects to wherever I am. And so it's great to, you know, be sitting at a, you know, restaurant in Paris and get an office phone call, and the person has no idea, you know, where in the world is Ed Brill. So that's really made a huge difference in my productivity international travel-wise. I do like to have a satellite nav system if I can get a hold of one. Not really as easy to do traveling internationally, but sometimes pretty useful. And then the rest of it is really just websites that I completely rely on to manage my travel and understand, you know, what's going on with flights and getting to and from airports and the like. So not a lot of gadgets in the bag. The bag's heavy enough with the laptop and, you know, some other basics in it.
What about an iPod? No iPod?
I do have an iPod, sorry.
Okay.
Of course, my iPod goes with it.
All right. I just want to make sure, you know, because if not, then we need to rally to convince you to get one.
No, I have a
to listen to all the podcasts.
At least he admitted that he hasn't listened to many lately.
That's true.
Well, you know, I think it works for some people who have, you know, commutes. I have no commute. Right? Oh. I work at home.
Ed, you spend more time in airports and airplanes than I do commuting every week.
Right. We'll beat him up after the podcast. Julian, why don't you shoot Greg Eldred's question?
Greg, which one is that? The dearth of information question.
Yes,
The
dearth.
Greg Eldred writes, there always seems to be a dearth of information and announcements in the weeks after Lotusphere. Is this to allow for everything to sink in, to allow the bloggers to catch up, something else? Since you started blogging and the customers are a lot closer, how has that changed IBM's relationship with customers or with you? Which we've partially answered before.
Yeah, we covered that second one already.
The first one, well, you run a clean podcast, so I'll use the right expression. But you know, we kind of use most of our pending announcements up at Lotusphere, right? I mean, the whole purpose of Lotusphere is to lay out the agenda for where the brand and the products are going. What do you follow that up with 2 weeks later? I mean, there's just no sense in trying to hold something back when you're going to have 6,000 of your best customers and partners and the industry press and analysts all in, you know, one building in Orlando. So yeah, it does go quiet after Lotusphere. Most years, that has been a time where I find that people get pretty excited about what they're sort of absorbing and learning about. And I watched, you know, Declan Lynch has written some blog entries, for example, where he talks about things like, did you catch the announcement at Lotusphere that, you know, and so there's a lot of that going on right now where people are sort of Tuesday morning quarterbacking what we were talking about. We'll have more announcements. We're working on some stuff for Linux World, the IBM Lotus Tech Forum with DNUG in Germany in May. We'll have some announcements. So, you know, there's always stuff going on, but we definitely use Lotusphere as a rally point for the year.
All right. Julian, pick another one here.
Okay, well, I think my favorite question on here was and another slightly techie one, but I think it's you know, kind of sales and marketing enough that you can probably cover it. Matt Buchanan asked, are we going to be seeing a new licensing model to cover the new features in Domino R next? For example, will we have to buy anything to get Activity Explorer running? And I thought that was a good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. I don't have an answer for it yet. We're looking at a lot of different things around how Notes and Domino go forward, not just in terms of, you know, what's on subscription and what are net new, and you know, there's a lot of just things we can look at here. The most important message is if you're using Notes and Domino today and you're on subscription, you're going to get Notes Hanover and the next version of the Domino server as part of that subscription. When we start to look at some of the opportunities to integrate with the workplace technologies, then, you know, those are still the areas where we're trying to figure out what's the right packaging, you know, what's part of the Notes client as it will be defined in that time frame. You know, certainly things like being able to access composite applications is a core value proposition, so we'll do that as part of Notes, but some of the others just don't know yet, and the nice thing is we have a fair amount of time to still, you know, figure that out, and we're certainly actively taking input from customers on that.
So would like Activity Explorer not be a core feature of Hanover?
I don't really know yet whether it's going to be something that we say is just, you know, one of the things that Notes client does out of the box, or whether it's sort of a, you know, an adjunct or a additional piece of the Notes equation. It's a product you can buy today in the workplace client world. So, you know, it's not something that is waiting for its 1.0 release. The code is out there now and it can work in a workplace client environment. So it's just a matter of like that and like workplace documents, what are the things we do in terms of integrating those into the Notes Hanover experience.
All right. Here's one by Bob Brodsky. Will DNFS ever return? That was a Domino, what was it?
Domino Network File Store.
Right, and that allowed you to store, you know, files from, say, Windows Explorer right into a Domino database.
Yeah, who was the marketing guy on that?
Let's see, Ed Lepofsky?
Yeah, right.
that's, you know, the other DNF,
yeah. DNFS and me go way back, and, you know, it was part of a release we did codenamed BlueJay, that had the first release of Domino Access for Outlook, or at the time iNotes Access for Outlook, and a couple other things that have also, you know, not been sort of carried forward. But the DNFS code had a lot of limitations. It used basically NetBIOS as its protocol, had a 256 connection limit, ran on Windows servers only, wasn't translated beyond English, you know, so all sorts of things that we can't just get away with anymore. And this is kind of the good thing about IBM at this point is, you know, we don't do half-baked efforts like that. If we're going to release a product, we're going to release it in a fairly serious way. So we looked at web dev for a while as a way to go forward with this and, you know, put web dev in the Domino server for design elements, but haven't done it for documents themselves.
But the real answer in the long term is going to be JSR 170, which is this open standard for accessing document systems. And the Notes client in the Hanover timeframe will talk to that through the workplace documents piece. So this is kind of where that's that fuzzy, you know, what are the pieces that are native, what are the pieces that are integrated. But the workplace client can do that and, you know, store things in a document repository in a way that that can be manifested right in the Windows Explorer or anything else. So long term, I think that that standard is really going to be the way to do something like this.
Right, and the workplace client features may manifest themselves into Hanover?
So the Hanover release is being built primarily to be delivered as a workplace managed client plugin.
Right.
It's so the other plugins that run in the workplace managed client include activities, include workplace documents, and you know many others. And so you know part of the work that we're doing is to make sure that Notes running in the Eclipse client has the ability to work with the other Eclipse plugins. That's part of what delivers the net new value of this, you know, extended Notes release. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's really, I'd like to be able to say we're going to be able to drag and drop out of a Notes attachment, an attachment in a Notes document, straight into a workplace documents repository. And, you know, I've seen it in demos, so, you know, I'm hopeful that that's something that we're going to be able to do when Hanover ships. But even if it's not at the first release, it's certainly directionally what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm.
Just a couple more questions, and one question, I forgot where I saw it, but I, as far as the designer stuff goes for Hanover, are there any plans to do anything with Domino Designer to in line with the Hanover release, and is going to get a new facelift as well, or?
So. Not a major one, no. I mean, when we shipped 6, which was the last kind of release that we did where we updated everything all at once, that was 20 million lines of code and a 3+ year effort. And we didn't want to do that. And you as customers don't want us to do that because it's just too much change to absorb all at once. So really with Hanover, yes, there will be incremental changes to Designer, especially some to take advantage of new features that'll be in the Notes release. But we're not, you know, sort of going through the same top-to-bottom analysis with Designer that we did with the Core Notes client, basically because if we change too many of the pieces at once, it's just too long to absorb, and we'd like you to be able to continue to build Domino Designer applications for Notes, whether it's 6, 7, or Hanover at the time we ship, and not have to sort of have a pause in the market. There, long-term, you know, there's still a lot of planning going on around Domino Designer, around the workplace designer, and around how those two sort of work together going forward. But Domino Designer is definitely continuing to get updated. You know, when, how, and what happens to it long-term is still, you know, a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Julian, why don't you take the two more questions from, was it Richard Duffy and Paul Moran?
Yeah, well, and there was, there was also the one about QuickPlace. Might be a quick answer. I guess Daniel Silva asked about plans for an aggressive overhaul of QuickPlace.
Another extreme makeover, huh? So, you know, we're doing it with Notes, we're doing it with SameTime. The QuickPlace team is just sort of, you know, a little bit further behind in terms of what we've been able to commit to publicly. But there is definitely a plan around the next release. And, you know, we'll hopefully have details to share of that sometime. Mm-hmm. In the near future.
And they did have a couple sessions at Lotusphere where they did a long-term vision for QuickPlace, which I actually have the slide sets for, so maybe I can get them posted up on the on Ben Poole's Lotusphere Wiki for Daniel's question there.
Right.
Okay, so let's see, two more. So Richard Duffy, and Ed, you may have to help me frame this question because I'm not sure what the scope of the question was, but he said, when are we going to see Domino embracing the compliance world and providing native services?
Right. So the question is really around, you know, things like archiving retention and compliance around Sarbanes-Oxley and things like that. Mm-hmm. And we have a couple of solutions in that space. Workplace product line has a solution called Business Controls and Reporting and a solution called Business Strategy and Execution, and those are great in terms of dashboards and, you know, sort of management tools, but the sort of more, you know, sort of workman-like need to do archiving retrieval and things like that. You know, there's a pretty robust partner market around it, and we continue to look at what we need to be able to do to support that versus what needs to go in the core product. So core product has features like mail journaling. You know, how much further do we take that versus what's going on in the partner market? But, you know, when we look at what the market is doing and some of the appliance vendors, some of the service-oriented vendors, you know, clearly there's a market need to do more front-end hygiene, as it were, of messages coming into your environment, antivirus, anti-spam, compliance, you know, everything else. And so we want to make sure that you know, we're doing the right stuff to either enable or provide that.
Okay, and we'll do one more question, and we apologize to anyone who left us a question that didn't get asked. I think we're hitting about maybe the 5-hour mark on this podcast right now, so let's go ahead and try to bring this to a painless end. Okay, last one we have on here, Paul Moran said, currently to get the Notes application portal to run in the managed client, you need to install R7 on the client machine. Any plans to provide a more seamless way of viewing Notes applications within the WMC and not having to install Notes on the client machine?
I guess the answer to that is, in the Hanover timeframe, Notes and WMC are based on the same fundamental code base. So Notes will be part of the WMC install. You know, what we do from a licensing perspective, I don't know yet. But and WMC will be part of the Notes install. So the distinction that exists now, where Notes C:\notes.exe needs to be installed in order for WMC to be able to use Notes, that'll go away. You know, what the technology behind that looks like, you know, I'm not real sure yet. Mm-hmm. One other point on that, just because I got to throw it in here somewhere, is we are in the Hanover timeframe building a C:\notes.exe, you know, current architecture version of the Notes client. And that's primarily being done so that customers don't necessarily feel they have to be prepared to launch into the full UI refresh Eclipse-based version of Notes to carry forward, that there'll be a, you know, an incremental step available as well.
So run that by one more time, Ed. There's going to be a new version of Notes that won't be based on Eclipse?
Right, that'll be based on the pure existing code base architecture, whereas the version based on Eclipse is based on the Notes code as it exists today as well. Neither is a rewrite, but there'll be one that looks exactly like the installation and configuration of Notes that you use today, and then there'll be the sort of mainstream Notes release in Hanover, which will be the Eclipse-based client. We're doing the one on the classic Notes client, as it were, so that there's an incremental path forward, and also for machines that maybe won't have the hardware in place, the RAM required or processor speed to run the Eclipse-based client.
All right. Before we go into before we go and listen to Jess's 1-minute Notes power tip, I just want to thank you, Ed, for spending your late Thursday evening with us.
Sure.
And we really appreciate hearing everything you have to say, and you know, the honor of talking to Ed Brill, you know, the super blogger. It's like, I'm looking at the screen and it's like not telling me what to say here. So
I can't help you out there, Bruce.
I know. I liked it a lot better when we were podcasting in the same room together, but we'll do that next year. So I did say earlier in the podcast that Declan Lynch was going to be doing a new segment for us, but due to some technical difficulties, we're not going to be able to have that. That's it for this week. So we're going to have Jess do the 1-minute power tip, and we'll be hopefully talking to you in another week or so. Julian, anything?
Yeah, no. Ed, thank you very much. You were great.
Sure, no problem.
Hi there. We're going to talk about the catalog today. And anybody who's ever heard me speak is probably actually really sick and tired of hearing me talk about the catalog. But too bad. I love it. I find it extremely useful. So I want to share everything I know about it. So here's the quick and dirty rundown about the catalog. It contains a list of all the databases on the server. To create or update the catalog, type load catalog at the console. and it'll create catalog.nsf. To update it, you can either type load catalog again. If it exists, it'll update it. It'll create it if it doesn't exist. Or you can add catalog as a server tasks line in the notes.ini. By default, I think it's already there at 1 a.m. though. So you would think that it only contains those databases that have the database property set list in catalog. That's actually not true. They're all in there. The ones that don't have that property are hidden via view selection formula in a view in the catalog. So if you want to see all your databases without having to worry about making sure they're all toggled, then take out the view selection formula that says not DB list in catalog equals zero. All of a sudden, they'll all show up. Basically, you'll get all your databases, and you can find out really cool stuff about them, like which ones don't have an admin server set and what design template it uses. I could go on, but I only get a minute, and I'm already over that, so I'll stop. Thanks.